This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon. This is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, sitting in for Tony Perkins today. April 25th, 2017, approximately 5:05 in the evening. That's Eastern Standard Time, obviously, different times across the nation. Thanks for tuning in today to Washington Watch, where we cover the news not only in Washington but across the nation. Got a great show for you today. We're going to cover first, in the first segment, we are going to cover President Trump's massive spending cuts in U.S. foreign aid, with one exception. And the clear and glaring reception is in the so-called Palestinian authorities, more specifically in the West Bank and Gaza, and more accurately, in Samaria. In the second segment of the day, we are going to shift gears and we're going to cover the Berkeley protests. And we will talk about Ann Coulter's speech and the fact that she was invited, disinvited, and there's some discussion about her being re-invited on a day that she's not available. And she may actually go on the initial day that she was scheduled, whether they want her or not. As we turn the corner at the bottom of the hour, we will talk about Caitlyn Jenner, Bruce Jenner, and the fact that he was on Tucker Carlson's program last night on Fox and said that he has no problem whatsoever with transgender males competing in women's athletics. How do you feel about that? What do you think about the fact that a biological male can now compete against women at the intercollegiate level, the high school level, and now at the Olympic level? Is that pro-woman or is that anti-woman? Is that honoring feminism to deny the female, or is it actually a good idea, as Jenner himself is arguing right now? Without further ado, we will go right now to the top of the hour, and we have Susan Michael. Susan is the United States Director of the International Christian Embassy in Jerusalem. Susan, are you with us right now? Welcome to Washington Watch.
I am, and thank you so much. I'm very happy to be with you today.
Delighted to have you. I've already given you a little bit of an intro here, obviously, and I've told the listeners that we want to discuss President Trump's U.S. foreign aid budget and the fact that he is proposing that we have pretty substantial cuts in U.S. foreign aid, except in what some call the Palestinian territories, more specifically in Samaria. And in the area that is war-torn, and people are suffering accordingly. So I guess I'll start right off with this question. The administration's March budget vowed to slash aid to developing countries by over a third, small rise of 4.6% in foreign aid to the West Bank and Gaza, which would go, which would bring it up to $215 million for the fiscal year 2018. Other places in the Middle East that would see increased aid would be Syria, Iraq, and Libya, which will all see hundreds of millions of dollars invested should the budget proposal receive approval. So there's steep bipartisan opposition to slashing foreign assistance, and the cuts are also indicative of a wider push to tie development aid with U.S. national security threats. Some experts are expressing fear that cutting foreign aid could risk ceding U.S. influence in these regions around the world. So what is your view of this? Should the Trump administration be proposing an increase in aid to the Palestinian Authority, or do you hold a different view? Give us some education on this.
Well, absolutely. Personally, I do not think we should be increasing any funding to the Palestinians. Having said that, I have to believe that Trump has some sort of purpose behind this and an agenda. And for him to get any kind of support for a move like this, he needs to tie this money going to the Palestinians to real deliverables that they have to deliver before they actually receive it. So there needs to be strings attached to the money. First and foremost, they need to accept the existence of Israel, which they continue to deny. And secondly, they've got to stop funding terrorism and rewarding terrorism. And Prime Minister Netanyahu just yesterday called on them to stop giving subsidies to the families of terrorists. We just had a British young woman, a theology student in Jerusalem, who was brutally murdered by stabbing by a Palestinian. And because he now qualifies, his family will receive payments from the Palestinian government. And this needs to stop. So if Trump is going to dangle a carrot in front of the Palestinians of money, it needs to come with strings attached, and that should be the first one.
Do you have any funding terrorism? Do you have any confidence that President Trump and the administration and Congress will attach those strings? Because I would argue, know for a fact that the Palestinian Authority is sponsoring terrorism, and President Mahmoud has no intention of changing that. As far as I know, I've never seen anything in the news or otherwise that would indicate that he intends to change direction on these issues. So is there any evidence that President Trump is attaching these strings that you suggest should be there? And do you have confidence that anyone will support him in terms of final budget approval in those strings being meaningful and actually having some teeth in them?
Well, there are some indications being discussed. And for instance, on Wednesday, the Al-Quds newspaper reported that Trump will demand the Palestinian end its practice of paying these terrorist families. So, you know, I think that it is very possible, but they need to hear from the grassroots. They need to hear from the American people that we're tired of our money going to the Palestinian Authority without these types of restrictions. I believe there's a lot of support in Congress for putting on those kinds of restrictions. So, yeah, I do think it's possible.
Okay, President Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, is now a senior advisor in the White House. He's Jewish. What kind of counsel do you think he is giving? Do you have any inside scoop on Jared Kushner's ideology, his politics, his view of Israel, his view of Jerusalem, his view as to where the capital should be? Where does Kushner stand on a lot of these things? And he has the president's ear for obvious reasons. What do you think he's saying?
Well, I don't think we really know where Jared Kushner's coming from, because he doesn't come from a background of politics or journalism or in any way that his views were expressed on these things. So we really don't know where he's coming from, and, you know, I think that it is a little concerning. I think we'd like to know better what kind of advice that the president is receiving. But I will say this, we can be very happy, and I think sleep a little bit better at night over this, understanding that Trump has a very good relationship with Israel now. And so I believe that he is receiving good advice. He has many sources of advice. And I believe they're working together in partnership now. We no longer have this adversarial relationship. And so I do believe that he's getting good advice. I think he's learning every day. These are very complex issues. They're not easy to solve. They're not going to be solved overnight. And I think the important thing, once again, is that the American people speak up and let their views be heard on these issues, so that he also is hearing from the American people.
I'm reading between the lines on your comments that you're optimistic, that you actually are a bit bullish on President Trump's foreign policy. Am I right, or do you want to correct me on that?
I would like to be optimistic, so let's put it that way.
Regardless of who the president is right now, would you agree that there was a tremendous hole dug by the previous administration with regard to United States influence or lack thereof in the Middle East, and that we dropped the ball, and that President Obama and his administration created a mess for us in the Middle East that is very difficult to recover from as we engage and try to reassert American authority and American influence worldwide, and more specifically in this area of the world? Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. What has been delivered to President Trump's desk when he took this position was a complete mess and a massive failure in the Middle East. The United States is looked down upon. We have no respect. We have made enemies of our allies, and we've made allies of our enemies. So he has a tremendous job in order to straighten all of that up. And so I think that we do need to be optimistic, but cautiously so. We need to pray for him. Secondly, we need to raise our voice so that he hears from the people. And, you know, I know I've said that three times now, but it comes back to us. You know, we can't just sit back and judge. We've got to be involved and do what we can to help these leaders and encourage them when they're taking the right step. But you're absolutely right. He has huge problems to tackle and to solve, and it can't be done overnight.
Is the real issue in the Middle East Iran? Does it all boil down to Iran?
Well, it is the number one issue, and it's the number one issue for Israel. It is the number one issue for the Sunni Muslim world. It is the number one issue for the United States and for Europe, because this is a country that is dead set on developing nuclear weapons and developing the interballistic missiles to deliver those weapons anywhere in the world. So it is a huge threat. And it is, for Israel in the Middle East, the number one threat. And that's why this president has such leverage. If he will use it, he has tremendous leverage in really solving major problems in the Middle East because of their concern for Iran. So if he will go to the major Arab leaders of the Sunni world and say, I will help you solve this problem with Iran, and in return, I want this, this, and this, he'll get it. Because they're desperate to have his help with that problem.
During the campaign, President Trump promised to move the United States Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Do you believe that should happen? Question number one. And do you have any updates on that progress toward actually fulfilling his promise to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to the ancient city of Jerusalem?
Well, I do believe it should happen. I believe that it's time that we treat our closest ally in the Middle East with the respect that we've given all the other countries in the world, which is that we put our embassy in their capital. We don't debate whether it's the right city or not. We put our embassy there. So we need to right this historic wrong. And yes, there may be some reaction to it, but once again, I believe because of the leverage that this president has at this moment in history, he can minimize that reaction by going to these Sunni leaders and saying, I'm going to do this. Now, I'm going to help you in return, but I want you to not leave, you know, a resistance to this. And I believe he would get it. What is going to happen? All I can tell you is, because we are getting mixed messages, but I will say that something will happen within the next month. By June the 4th, which is the date that the president will either sign the waiver, waiving the implementation of moving the embassy for another 6 months, or he will either sign it or he won't sign it. And if he doesn't sign it, that embassy is going to move. If he signs it, it means we have another 6 months to let him know we want him to move that embassy.
Susan, thank you so much. Thank you for joining us. Very informative. Very informative. Susan Michael, with the United States, she's the U.S. Director of the International Christian Embassy in Jerusalem. Thank you, Susan. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins. The call-in number is 866-372-7234. We'll be right back in a couple minutes.
We at the American Family Association believe men should not be allowed to use women's restrooms or dressing rooms. Yet the policy of Target allows just that. Do you agree that this policy poses danger to our women and children? Then sign the Boycott Target Pledge. When you do, you're saying, until Target makes the safety of women and children a priority, I'll shop elsewhere. The good news is the boycott is making a big difference. A Target financial report indicates a dramatic drop in their sales and earnings. And a Wall Street Journal article clearly shows that Target CEO Brian Cornell regrets his company's policy announcement welcoming men to use women's restrooms and dressing rooms. We're convinced that together we can stop this insanity before more women and children become victims. Sign the pledge today and tell others about the boycott. go to afa.net/target. That's afa.net/target.
This is Barry McGuire. I'm a car guy, and I love to lead people to Jesus Christ as a layman outside the walls of the church. I was recently at a ministry conference that attracted lay people from all over the country and around the world, many of whom looked like they couldn't afford it. But you don't have to travel around the world or across the country to get it. It can happen anywhere, because there's no higher spiritual high than the high that comes from leading someone to the Lord, knowing that the angels in heaven are rejoicing at that very moment because that person just crossed the line and will now spend eternity in heaven and not in hell. Nothing compares the joy of that privilege. Your job is to ignite revival outside the walls of the church by moving every person you're with today and every day closer to Jesus. And if you want to know how to do that, go to ROTW.com.
Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. You know, the charitable gift annuity concept is more important today than probably ever. It is something that you have heard me talk about for many, many years. And right now, for now, the tax code is still allowing charitable organizations to establish a charitable gift annuity so that you can be guaranteed permanent income for the rest of your life. Don't waste any time. So many of you have IRAs, 401k money. Peel off a piece of that. Establish your charitable gift annuity so that you have a portion of permanent income that you know is never going to change for the rest of your life. Would you do it today? Call AFA Foundation, 800-326-4543. Extension 345. That's 800-326-4543. Extension 345.
And welcome back to Washington Watch. Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, a university that is boldly and unapologetically committed to the truth of Christ and the truth of Scripture. Oklahoma Wesleyan stands boldly and unapologetically on four things. The primacy of Jesus Christ, Jesus is the Son of God. The priority of Scripture, Scripture is the Word of God. The pursuit of truth, truth is given by God, it is not made up by you or me. And then finally, the practice of wisdom. The practice of wisdom, of holiness, of sanctification, obedience is demanded by God, it is not optional. And the irony today is that this conservative Christian liberal arts school called Oklahoma Wesleyan University is standing for intellectual freedom and freedom of speech and freedom of inquiry and freedom of thought and freedom of expression, much more so than our left of center counterparts across the nation. You see the snowflake rebellion running rampant through the streets and on the campuses and in the greens, various different university quads across the land. You have Harvard and Dartmouth and Princeton and Yale. You have Emory and Middlebury. The stories are almost endless. You turn on the news each evening and you see another riot, another protest, another group of students, many of them with masks, their faces hidden, burning things, pillaging things across the nation, disrupting the academy because they don't like an idea that's been expressed. They're calling for safe spaces, that they want to feel safe. They're calling for trigger warnings. If there's any contrary idea that might make them feel uncomfortable, you're supposed to warn them in advance. They're saying that any idea that makes them feel uncomfortable and might challenge them is a microaggression and should be curtailed. This is nonsense. It's postmodernity running amok. It's the antithesis of the liberal arts community. This is not liberty. This is conformity. This is not intellectual freedom. This is ideological fascism. I'm obviously very, very passionate and biased about this particular issue. Well, the victim this week to the Snowflake Rebellion is Ann Coulter. And with me right now to discuss this particular situation is Jennifer Breeden from the Clarion Project. Jennifer, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me on.
Great having you here. I obviously am just ticked off at what my industry is doing and the duplicity of claiming to be, of Berkeley of all places, claiming to be the birthplace of the free speech movement, now being guilty of restricting speech just because there's a conservative spokesperson being invited to the campus and they don't like it. Comments?
Absolutely. And it would just be like a Nazi party coming back out in Germany and saying that they stand for Jewish rights. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. And now you have Ann Coulter's protesters and the violent threats actually caused the university to shut down her speech and instead have her on during finals week when normal classes are not in session so that there wouldn't be as many students. Universities are no longer a place to learn about adulthood from our professors. I mean, obviously, we learn about the truth. We do all these things. They're no longer a place, though, to learn to become adults. They're now a place for the ignorant masses with zero life experience to bully their own educational leadership into shutting down free speech. We are losing our society if we cannot be strong in values and say no to students and their threats. This event showed the world that Berkeley is now just run by its students, not its grown-up faculty members. And Bernie Sanders became the voice of reason, telling them, if you can't even have a dialogue, a conversation, a respectful debate with somebody that you don't agree with, whether it's Ann Coulter or anybody else, then all you're telling the world is that you have no idea what it is you stand for, and you're just trying to shut down speech of anyone you disagree with.
Amen, amen, and amen. What we have right now, what we have is, I'm going to repeat myself and give you some red meat to throw back to the listeners. What we have right now is the birthplace of the free speech movement, Berkeley. Now, I would argue that that's always been a ruse. Berkeley isn't the birthplace of the free speech movement. Bethlehem is. Free speech, human freedom, human dignity, human justice, human liberty was born in Bethlehem, not in Berkeley. And without the context of truth, you shall never be set free. You know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. There was a time when the Academy had that emblazoned across its library and on its shield, from Oxford to Cambridge to Dartmouth to Harvard, and even Berkeley itself to this day has a motto that is, let there be light. Dare I say, a biblical model. But yet Berkeley is afraid of having a conservative come and disrupt our poor snowflakes who find that to be disturbing.
Absolutely. And that's the worst thing. You know, when I was getting ready to go to law school, I actually got into some, you know, top-tier law school, some of which you mentioned at the start of the segment. And I chose to go to Regent University. And I love that you're talking about, you know, Wesleyan and how there are good universities out there teaching truth. I chose to go to Regent University, a Christian law school in Virginia Beach. And because of that, you know what I learned? I learned the law. I learned truth. And it's not relative truth. It's not this moral relativism that whatever is you know, the item du jour, that's what we call truth that day. This is natural law. This is truth that is never changed. It's inalienable. And it's what our founders, you know, started because of Bethlehem, as you said, because of these inherent truths that cannot be taken away from us. And it's very, very sad when you see a society now and a university system that has no concept of inalienable rights, truth, and freedoms, including this freedom of speech. You know, to Bernie Sanders, his point was that those who disagree with Coulter should raise those disagreements respectfully and be ready to debate them. But in America, we've become more intent on shutting down dissenting voices rather than coming together to dialogue our disagreements and understand each other as human beings and Americans.
Well, and again, it's ironic that I, as a conservative Christian, as the president of a biblically driven and unapologetically conservative Christian liberal arts institution, I celebrate academic freedom and intellectual liberty much more so than my left of center counterpart, the chancellor at Berkeley, for example. I believe that truth will win. I am not afraid of putting any idea on the table because I know there's a referee to blow the whistle on the game. It's called truth. As Oz Guinness says, truth is true even if no one believes it, and falsehood is false even if everyone believes it. Truth is true, and that's the end of it. Without the pursuit of truth, the Academy is a meaningless political propaganda machine. Truth should be the objective of the Academy, not the perpetuation of your opinion or mine. This is Dr. Everett Piper. Jennifer, I'm sorry. I ranted there and cut you off, but I do have to make a transition to the next segment. Thank you so much, Jennifer, for joining us. Coming up next, we're going to discuss Caitlyn Jenner, the retired Olympic gold medalist, and Bruce Jenner's claims that there's nothing wrong with transgender males competing at the women's level. This is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. The call-in number is 866-372-7234. We'll take a brief break, and I will be right back in a minute or two.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, it looks like markets are at a seven-week high, the largest gains in more than 7 weeks. That's good. At the same time, oil is suffering six straight losses of renewed fears now over oversupply. Wait a minute. Wasn't it just 3 weeks ago they thought the supply situation was all good and taken care of and it wasn't going to be a problem with inventories and oil was just going to continue to go up? Well, that didn't happen as I suspected it wouldn't. And now we've got oil just hovering around $50 mark. As a matter of fact, it was below 50 at 49.13. We'll see where it goes from here. Of course, that will disincentivize some of the frackers and the shale drillers to maybe slow down a little bit if they have plans on drilling anything new or putting online anything. So that might be good news for oil prices in the end. It looks like the target for the Trump administration this week is going to be tax reform. That's what we need more than anything. It has to be top priority. Repeal and replace, yeah, it's important. Infrastructure, yeah, it's important. But tax cuts and tax reform have to be the number one thing on the agenda, and apparently it is this week. President Trump saying wants 15% corporate tax rate. I think that's a little overkill. We probably don't need that, but maybe we compromise up to 17%. That would work. 15 will be great. Secretary Mnuchin says, look, this is not going to create deficit. The growth that we get from this huge stimulus is going to more than create the revenue stream that we need to continue to keep the government running without racking up more deficits. We'll have to wait and see about that, but that has been the history of tax cuts.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Hey, welcome back to Washington Watch. Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon. Remember that the call-in number is 866-372-7234. I'll give that to you one more time. 866-372-7234. After this segment, as we go into the last 15 minutes of the hour, I do want to take phone calls. So remember, 866-372-7234. With us right now is Dr. Alex McFarlane. He is, Alex, you're with Focus on the Family, and I'm going to have you introduce yourself as to what your title and what your function is there. Alex, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you for having me. I was with Focus on the Family, and I still am on their radio show periodically, but I direct the Center for Apologetics and Christian Worldview at North Greenville University, which is a Christian university in South Carolina. But I write books and travel and speak and try to evangelize the lost and equip the saved.
Well, great mission, great cause, good university too, great university. I'm well aware of Greenville, and they're one of the handful of universities in the nation, literally a handful, that I personally would recommend that takes a bold and unapologetic stand for a sound Christian apologetic, a biblical worldview as the foundation for good education and what a university degree should give you, and that is the ability to understand and defend your faith. So good for you. I'm sure you're having a good time at Greenville leading the charge.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for your stand for Christ and your defense of the truth.
All right, we've got the transgender issue. It seems like it's endless. I know there's some people who say, I'm exhausted with this, I don't want to talk about it anymore. But just last night, on Tucker Carlson's show on Fox News, Bruce Jenner, now known as Caitlyn Jenner, was on, and he was being interviewed on a variety of different things. One of them turned to the issue of, is it fair for biological men to compete in women's athletics? Now, to set this up a little bit further, I want to clarify for the listeners. Oklahoma Wesleyan University, under my leadership, has taken a very clear position on this issue. My position is this. If you want me to be pro-woman, if you want me to honor Title IX, which is a 1972 law that obligates all colleges and universities to give women equal access to the athletic field, to the facilities, to the scholarships that come with intercollegiate sports, I cannot do that if you then turn around as the federal government, the DOE, the OCR, and require me to give the woman's sport over to a biological male who raises his hand on a given day and says, I'm a female. In other words, if you're forcing me to deny the fact of the female, female. I can't be pro-woman because you're telling me the woman doesn't exist any longer as an objective reality. She's nothing but a leprechaun and a unicorn, a fabrication and a fantasy, and this is lunacy, and it denies the woman her rights because it denies her very identity and existence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's a great point. You make a great point, and you're being logical and factual, which is something that the progressives and the left and the transgender and homosexual lobbies don't often do. But, you know, it's a fact. I mean, there are physiological differences between males and females. And, science has proven that women are just roughly half as strong as men in their upper bodies. Women are about two-thirds as strong in their lower bodies. A different metabolism, different physical structure. If transgender males are to compete in women's sports, I mean, they would have a physiological advantage. They just would. But, you know, we're in an age of enforced egalitarianism. It's really being imposed and mandatorily forced on us to not recognize any differences between the sexes, but biology certainly says differently.
But yet the news is out there right now. I can think of two different cases right now. There is the weightlifter from Australia who is a transgender male competing in women's weightlifting. And this particular person, now known as Laurel Hubbard, 39, lifted 591 pounds, nearly 20 pounds more than any woman in the competition, and received a silver medal for doing so. Mm. All right? We have the male volleyball player, transgender male, who's now identifying as a woman, volleyball player in Hawaii, who is going to be on the Olympic team and therefore take a spot away from a biological woman, a female, because he, as a genetic biological male, is competing at a higher level than most of the women that he competes against. But yet Bruce Jenner, when asked by Tucker Carlson, is this fair, says yes, he believes it is.
Well, you know, I really don't think that Bruce Jenner, a.k.a. Caitlyn, should be the go-to source for direction on much of anything these days. We're witnessing the ultimate expression of moral relativism. I mean, to say, you know, God, you have no claim on me, not even over my gender. You know, it's one thing to redefine behavior and social mores, cultural norms, but, you know, when it gets to your physiological makeup, I mean, if you're a male and you have XY chromosomes, I mean, that's something that God in his sovereignty chose. And yet we're at a point where, I mean, think about the illogic of this. Sexual orientation, the sexual choices you make, we're told that is unchangeable, that's fixed at birth, but yet your physiology is something that can be changed. Yeah, when in reality, it's 180 degrees the opposite. But this is the ultimate expression of moral relativism.
It absolutely is. I'm sorry to cut you short, but I am going to have to move into the next segment. Alex McFarland, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your input on this issue of gender identity and sexual biology. Thank you so much. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins. The call-in number is 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. Take a break right now. We'll be back in a minute or two.
It's happening everywhere, and not just in blue states. Radical LGBT activists are forcing potentially dangerous policies on schools, businesses, and other public places, violating the safety and privacy of women and threatening religious freedom. How can churches help protect their community and be a voice for the vulnerable on these issues? What can state legislators do to push back against local ordinances and federal efforts to allow men into girls' showers, restrooms, and locker rooms? What can parents and voters do? In a special one-hour program, FRC President Tony Perkins is joined by Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, and others, including experts and victims, to talk about what some states are doing to protect the safety and privacy of women and children and to defend the freedom to believe. Visit frc.org/privacy to view this event and many more.
EngageMagazine.net has rich articles inviting you into great dialogue for any stage of life. Here's Teddy James.
The things that we value, there's no difference between the generations at all. We value hard work. We value family. We value values. Those things are true across generational lines. We don't want you thinking about Engage. Our heart is to get you to see the heart of God.
Go to EngageMagazine.net and join the discussion.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms, in association with American Family Studios, introduces Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrades. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Pre-order your copy today at afastore.net.
Welcome back. Really appreciate all of you tuning in to Washington Watch this afternoon. Also honored that Tony Perkins has decided to hand the baton off today as he's taken a day off to deal with other business. This is Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, sitting in. The call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. In this last segment, I want to take calls. We've had some very important topics thus far. Two of them that I obviously am very passionate about is the issue of intellectual freedom versus the ideological fascism that exists on most campuses today. What do I mean by that? Talked before about the fact that a fascist was a Roman bundle of sticks bound together so tightly that they could not be broken. It was the unbreakable nature of forced commonality, the fascist. And that is the word from which we get our word fascism. Fascism is the forced compliance. It's the forced unity. It's the forced submission. You shall be one of us. You shall agree with us, or we will expel you. We will crush you. We will crush you because we can't be broken. And that's what's happening on today's college campus. And it's the Christian educator, it's the Christian scholar, it's the conservative scholar who believes in conserving the time-tested truths of God as opposed to bowing at the altar of these postmodern constructs of political correctness and safe spaces and microaggressions and trigger warnings. It's the Christian conservative, such as yours truly, who is stepping forward today and saying, we believe in freedom of ideas and freedom of expression and freedom to disagree. We believe in a robust debate. We believe that that's good within the educational community. Why do we believe that? Because we can have that disagreement, that argument, if you will, knowing that there is a judge that's bigger and better than you and me, knowing that there's a referee that understands the rule of the game and will allow us to play the game rather than get involved in chaos, knowing that the conductor recognizes the rules of rhyme and rhythm and cadence and that music can only take place if you honor those rules and you function within those standards, those objective standards, that you'll have chaos rather than a concerto if you do otherwise. The point is, the conservative believes in conserving truth, and thus truth sets us free. The truth gives us the freedom to pursue an open disagreement and a argument within the academy. And you see right now the Snowflake Rebellion, the postmodern faculty and staff and administration of the universities across our land missing the entire point of what the liberal arts community was established to do, and that was to liberate you, to educate a free man and a free woman, and give culture and humanity liberty. Like I said, freedom was not born in Berkeley. Freedom was born in Bethlehem. I have one caller right now. Her name is Nicole from Texas. Nicole, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much.
What can I do for you?
So I wanted to comment about Bruce Jenner, Caitlyn Jenner comment. I saw the interview last night, and the one theme, and I've seen other claims, not just about the Olympics, but the part that boggles me is that women are not standing up and saying, this is unfair. I am a woman. I have the, you know, less muscle strands than a man, and therefore I am unable to compete fairly in a men's competition. It just, you don't see it the other way. But yet men who become women think that they can compete equally with other women. That is not fair. That is absolutely not fair.
I agree with you completely, Nicole, and thank you. Thank you for having the courage to call in as a woman and saying that. And I believe your challenge to all other females, factual, biological, real females, is spot on. If women would step to the forefront, if the biological females would claim the high ground and demand to be heard, whether it be in the courthouse or in the public square or in the schoolhouse or in the church or at the political podium, wherever that may be, if you would step forward at town hall meetings and at parent-teacher conferences and at school board meetings and demand the rights that are guaranteed to you by Title IX, if women would say, how in the world can this institution be compliant with Title IX if it now denies the biological fact of the female? If women were leading that charge, you would be heard. The unfortunate thing is when a male, such as myself, says it, I can be easily dismissed. But if women would step to the forefront and ask the logical question, how can you be a feminist if you deny the female? How can you be pro-woman if you want to take my sport away and give it to a biological male? Just because on any given day he's dysphoric and delusional and he raises his hand and he says, I'm a female, when indeed he's not. I once said at Oklahoma Wesleyan University, I'm getting so frustrated with this, I'm about ready to take my male soccer team, which was ranked number one in the nation last year, and I'm about ready to put 11 guys, 11 biological men, on the field during a women's soccer game. I'm going to ask them to raise their hand and declare that they're female for a given point in time, just for that game. I'm going to compete them in that female soccer game. We're going to crush the opposition. There will be a petition filed against us, and it will say, you competed unfairly. And I'm going to say, why? And then I will hear these words, because they're not women. And my point will be this, exactly. Exactly. That's my point. It is not fair for me to take a bunch of biological men and put them on the field to compete against women. If that is actually where we are as a culture, then women's sports is dead. It's meaningless. It doesn't exist anymore. Melissa from Indiana, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Thank you for having my call. You guys just kind of took my comment. What I was going to say was, you have these women that are protesting for women's rights, but yet they don't protest this. When, like you said, if men are going to say, well, you know, I want to compete in a woman's sport because I feel like a woman today, there will be no more women's sports. They fought so hard to get women's rights and are out on the streets picketing now for women's rights, but yet they don't fight this, they don't find anything wrong with this. Before long, we're not going to have any sports because the men that are less muscular or not as strong as a man who claims to be a woman, but yet he's stronger than a woman, he's going to take it all away from us. So I don't know why they're not picketing this. Why aren't they out with their little pink hats saying, we're not for this? I just don't get it.
Well, your question is logical. It's spot on. There's absolutely nothing wrong with you asking that question. I would encourage you, be of courage, be bold, step into the debate, go to the public venue where you have the right to express your views when it comes to your rights as a woman. As a female, you should ask this question. Is a female real, or is she make-believe? Is a woman a fact, or is she nothing but a fabrication and a fantasy? Am I more than a leprechaun and a unicorn, or am I just like that? I'm make-believe. And anytime somebody wants to play dress-up and raise his hand in a given day, a given moment, and say, I'm a woman, he can supplant and bump me out of my sport, out of my shower, out of my locker room, out of my facilities, and even perhaps out of my job. Is that really where we are as a culture? And I would argue we're very close to that. Therefore, the left of center, the feminist, the progressive, the pro-woman advocate should be stepping forward right now and agreeing with everything I just said, because women have no rights if women don't exist. The greatest insult to a human being is to deny his or her very identity and say, you are not an objective fact any longer. You're nothing but a fabrication and a fantasy. And if I want to pretend I am one, that is the greatest insult to the woman that anybody could venture. Larry from Indiana, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Dr. Piper. Thank you for taking my call. I want to agree with the women that you've been talking to. Exactly. Where are the feminists? There's a deafening silence. I believe that really all the, quote, feminists I believe it's for abortion. I believe that's the whole point of their movement. Going to free speech. 40 years ago, I lived in Berkeley. I was a part of a street theater group. We used to do things with the Black Panthers and SDS and stuff like that. A Black Panther out in Chicago, two Black Panthers out in Chicago, had a altercation with the police. Two Black Panthers, Fred Hampton, I believe is his name, and I can't remember the other fellow's name, were both killed. They had a big rally out at Sproul Plaza. The gymnasium there at Berkeley. And basically you had thousands of white students who all sat there in the bleachers while these Black Panthers basically called all the white folks, you honkies, you're no good, you're not doing anything, you know, basically saying all the radicals and all that weren't doing enough, and just really ripping into all the people. A friend and I started to talk back and say, hey, we're here to support you. That's what we're about. We believe in your cause, you know, blah, blah, blah. And basically they did not want to hear anybody else who had anything else to say. They shut us down. They escorted us out of the gymnasium. And that was my experience with free speech in Berkeley.
And how long ago was this, Larry?
That was right around 70.
Okay, all right.
70,
okay.
71.
Okay, here's what I would argue. Those ideas that were being perpetuated in 1970 and 71 have borne themselves out. The chickens have come home to roost, so to speak. We argued for moral relativism in 1970 and 71. We argued that there was no such thing as objective truth, and that's the truth. We called for tolerance, but yet we condemned those that we found intolerable. We started this upside-down, illogical argument for what a society should be back in the 1970s, and the chickens have come home to roost. Bad ideas are bearing bad behavior in our culture and in our courtrooms, in our churches, and in our communities. Like Richard Weaver told us in 1948, ideas have consequences, and the ideas of the 1970s are the ideas that you are seeing bearing fruit in our culture right now, to the point where Berkeley, that prides itself in being the birthplace of the free speech movement, now is shutting down free speech because they find freedom of expression intolerable, and they do it under the banner of tolerance. They say they hate those hateful people. They're sure that nothing is sure. They know that nothing can be known. They're absolutely confident there are no absolutes. And because we believe in freedom, you are not free to express your ideas that we find to be offensive. This is upside down. It's what we were warned of by the prophet Isaiah. Woe unto him who calls evil good and good evil, black white and white black. When you reverse definitions and say that bitter is sweet and sweet is bitter, when you turn things upside down, we are warned. Woe unto him when you start reversing things and start worshiping the created rather than the creator. You're given over to a reprobate mind. You can't think your way out of a paper bag any longer. And that's what you see at Berkeley right now. Charlinda from Texas, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes. Thank you for having me on your program. I have a comment, first off, to address what he just said, because I grew up, and I'm a product of the 60s, and I do believe that feminism is what is wrong with our culture today. They want, women were not happy being women in the home, and they felt like they had to be taken out of the home, or they wanted to be taken out of the home, have jobs, and prove that they were as good as men. Women can't ever be men, and men can never be women. God created women, men, women, women, and men, men. And he did not make a mistake. God cannot make a mistake, or God is not God. If he could make a mistake, then we don't have anything to worship. And I think that's truly what's wrong with our society today. And males have so many chromosomes, females have so many chromosomes, and even if they have surgery, a man can't become a woman, and a woman can't become a man. And I think that they are so unhappy and so morally flawed that they just cannot accept who God created them to be. And they want to be something different, just to have something to argue and to fight about and a cause to support.
And Charlinda, here's where we are right now. Just take your idea just a little bit further. If we really embrace the trans movement that's sweeping our culture, and that we believe that transsexualism is acceptable morally, biologically, ontologically, epistemologically, if transsexualism is the is a given, and we don't have any difficulty with that, it will not stop there. All ideas bear consequences. And if we agree in transgender and transsexualism, then what will the next trans movement be? Well, I can tell you, we already know that there's a movement called transablement, where those who believe that they should be differently abled. For example, if you have the delusion that you think you should be an amputee and that you would be more fulfilled as a human being if you were an amputee as opposed to having two arms and two legs, transablement would call upon you to be able to change your body accordingly. Go to the doctor, have him cut off your arm, because you are transabled. I am not making this up. This is a literal argument that's taking place right now. And logically, it makes sense, because if you can cut off your genitalia, okay, if you can remove one appendage, if you will, and have that be celebrated by government and culture, then why can't you remove another appendage and have that be celebrated likewise? Where does it stop? This is the dilemma that we face as a culture today. When you exchange the truth of God for a lie, when you exchange the truth of God for a lie, you become reprobate in your thinking. You cannot think straight any longer. The academy becomes worthless. Men become women, and women don't even exist any longer. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch. Thank you for joining me today. And remember, remember, the truth shall set you free. There is no freedom without truth.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.